Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Classic City Sports Podcast. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard along with Jonathan Williams. Got a good episode coming for you today. We are coming back after 2 weeks now. We took a week off last week. I was traveling and everything, so it's kind of difficult to do a show. But I just want to take a second before we even jump into this to thank everybody that watched last time. Like the video, subscribe to the podcast. To everybody, we had a personal best show. Results for that one. It went over 1,000 views for the first time on this podcast. It was kind of exciting for us. We were excited about it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We gained some subscribers from it. So I think everybody kind of enjoyed the episode as much as we did. So we're going to try to do the same thing this week and give you something that's worthwhile, something you want to watch, and something that you want to tell other people about. So as you can see with the title, some stuff going on with Todd Monken, and we're going to start throughout the offseason breaking down different position groups of the team for 2023. Best place to start for that is going to be the QB room, and then we're bringing back an old segment from the past as well that we usually enjoy a good bit. And so when you hear it, we'll give you a cue as well to start sharing some stuff with us in the future. So, Jonathan, let's jump straight into it without any more delay. First part, Todd Monken. There's a lot of conversation about him right now. When you hear that he's interviewing for two different teams, what do you think? Because last time we came on the show, we sat here and talked about how we didn't really think that he would take a job, that there wasn't necessarily a job out there that he would be interested in. So now knowing that he has interviewed for a couple of places, what are your feelings on everything?
Well, I think one thing you kind of have to understand about when you hear these rumblings that Todd Monken is interviewing for these NFL jobs, and if there's no hiding who the teams are, it's the Baltimore Ravens and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think what you have to keep in mind with something like this is when NFL teams, especially someone in Todd Monken's place who has experience in the NFL and maybe potentially does want to venture out there later on in his career, whether that be right now or that be 2 or 3 years from now. It's like when a team extends not an offer to you, but they extend their hand to you and they're like, hey, you're someone that we're interested in. We'd like to bring you in and talk about a potential job with you and kind of get your thoughts on everything. Whether or not Todd Monken actually wants to take either of those jobs in Baltimore or Tampa Bay, there's a professionalism that you have to approach this with of like, I may not exactly be interested in these jobs, but it helps me out just by going in, showing face and doing an interview with them. Because the last thing you really want to do is just kind of burn a bridge with someone in a sense and say they're like, nope, I'm not interested in interviewing for either of your organizations. And because like, who knows, like 2 or 3 years from now, if Todd Monken is still at Georgia at that point, maybe those jobs do become enticing to him enough for him to do leave and go somewhere else. So just him taking the interviews, I don't think needs to be alarming. But what was alarming to me at first is when Tampa Bay was someone on the books hitting up Todd Monken's phone, because at the time, you know, today the news dropped that Tom Brady retired, officially retired, supposedly. We'll see if that lasts this time around. But and we'll get into that in a second about why I think that's a big deal. But it's because Tampa Bay is a place where Todd Monken has been before. From what I've heard, it sounds like that his wife enjoyed their time down in Tampa. And how could you not? Florida is a great place to live. A lot of people retire there for a reason because it's warm weather year round and whatnot. And Tampa Bay has been a contender as of late. But now that Tom Brady's out of the equation, there's a big old question mark at the quarterback spot. If you were to go over there and be an offensive coordinator, Kyle Trask is your front runner for the starting quarterback position over there in Tampa. Not exactly ideal. And then if you go over to Baltimore as well, there's a big question marks around Lamar Jackson's future in Baltimore, whether or not, even if they do franchise tag him, probably trading him, or maybe he just goes elsewhere and he walks. So two places that Todd Monken is interviewing, there's big question marks around the quarterback position, which I think is worthy of noting, because if you are going to be an offensive coordinator, and you said this a couple weeks ago, Stoddard, during the episode, if Todd Monken does go somewhere and takes an offensive coordinator job at an NFL gig, he would want stability in his offense and know that he can go there and have immediate success. Todd Monken has said repeatedly that a big thing for him is winning ball games. Right now, Baltimore and Tampa, not sure that those are winning organizations as of right now with how things are going there. So a lot of big news, a lot to talk about. Now, I just want to know your thoughts. Is that kind of how you're aligning with Stoddard here?
Yeah, and you hit on something that I was going to bring up as well, which, you know, as always, we're always on the same page, it seems like. So no surprise there for everybody watching. But it's exactly what we talked about 2 weeks ago when we were on here, was when you look at taking the jump from back to the NFL from college. I know he's been to the NFL before, so he kind of knows what he's dealing with. And that's why I think this is even more relevant, because he does know what it's like to take that step to the NFL. So if you're willing to take that jump to the NFL, you're immediately on the hot seat. They don't give you a lot. Like, you see first year head coaches getting fired now. They do not care. They don't give you time to settle in and figure it out. They need to make sure that you're performing at a high level immediately. And to do that, in the NFL, you need a really good quarterback, or at least a very serviceable quarterback, I'll say. And those two places right now, they don't have one. So they don't have that, like you were just talking about a second ago. Tom Brady's gone. Had Tom Brady stayed, it'd be more concerning. It'd be something that you'd look at it and go, maybe he will be interested in going there because he has Tom Brady, and everyone probably wants to coach or work with Tom Brady at some point in their career. Like, if you have the opportunity, that's kind of a hard thing to pass up. So there's that. And then, like you said as well, with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, I mean, they have what, Tyler Huntley? That's going to be their quarterback next year?
Hey, he's a pro.
Oh, come on. The dude has 2 touchdown passes and 3 picks on the season, and he's a Pro Bowler. I mean, that's a joke. That's a whole other conversation. We'll talk about that on Sunday on the 4Wide podcast with Dan Kiley, who's in the comments right now. Shouts to Dan. So, but that's your quarterback, right? So you're going over there, and Baltimore already didn't have a great season this year with Lamar Jackson throughout the season. And when he was out, they didn't play very well. So is it worth taking the jump from a team? Like, there's comments that, you know, Todd Monken's come out and said personally, where he's like, hey, I like winning. Winning is fun. Like, it's a culture that you want to be a part of. Like, you want to be a part of a winning program. Every single person in sports, whether it's the athlete, whether it's a coach, they always, always have a competitive nature, and they don't like to lose. So why take a jump? My personal opinion is, why take a jump from a team that this season has a dang good chance of going three-peat? Because if you look at the schedule, they have a very, very winnable regular season, and then that means they have almost an immediate lock into the playoffs if they win out all 12 games in the regular season, even if they lose an SEC championship game. We saw that 2 years ago from Georgia, or not this season, but last season from Georgia, where they did that. So you have a very good chance at going with three-peat. You have a quarterback that you've gotten to work with a good bit in maybe Carson Beck, which we're going to get into that as well. But the two different quarterbacks he has on his roster that would potentially start this year, he's had a good bit of time to work with those guys, so they understand what he's trying to do at this point in time. And so that goes a long way, I think. I know it's weird for him to be at Georgia as long as he's been already, but I do think that there's a really, really good chance that he wants to come back because he likes to win. And you don't have job security in the NFL. I think that's a big thing as well. So without those quarterbacks, especially if Lamar Jackson is leaving, if they don't pay him and he does leave, then I definitely don't think he wants to go out that way. I mean, shoot, even with Tom Brady, Tampa Bay was crappy this year. I mean, they made the playoffs, sure. But, I mean, it was like the NFC South was so bad. It was like nobody wanted to win it. It was who's going to take it at the end just based on having a crappy record. You're still going to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think it kind of says a lot. The fact that Tom Brady took this as a sign for him to kind of go ahead and hang it up officially, again, air quotes, because he pulled it last year where he retired and then came back like a month later. So, but I think that's kind of a sign to kind of say of not only what he thinks, not only what he thinks about his career, maybe that he's kind of peaked out, he's done, wants to go focus on other things, but also like he didn't think that it was worth coming back another year to Tampa. And there was rumblings about maybe him going elsewhere, giving it another go. But for him to just kind of say, all right, I'm done now, I think that kind of says there's some writing on the wall as far as Tampa Bay's roster right now and what Tom Brady thinks that they can do. And because Tom Brady freaking loves football, you don't play as long as he did without loving football and breathe football every single day of your life and love doing that. So if he feels that it's kind of an iffy situation, then the only thing that I could see maybe Tampa Bay doing that could maybe get Todd Monken to come over there and say like, hey, we'll bring you on for an offensive coordinator role for maybe a year because our head coach is kind of on the hot seat right now. If he has another blunder of a year, then maybe then you could be one of our top choices for our head coaching gig. Obviously you would have to interview and whatnot, but that's if Todd Monken's even interested in becoming NFL head coach. And we'll never know if that he has aspirations to do that right now, but what we do know is he loves winning, and as you said, Georgia is doing a lot of winning and they are set up perfectly in a good spot to do that again next year, potentially go 12-0 a third time, go win another SEC championship and be right back in the college football playoff to potentially three-peat because that offense is freaking loaded. And we'll get into that here in a second. So I'll let you go ahead and get us started on our next segment starter about the quarterbacks, kind of let you give an intro to that. I'm having some technical difficulties over here. So I'm going to go ahead and dip out for just a second. You can go on your little rant real quick.
All right, go ahead. But like I was just talking about as well, when you have a guy like Todd Monken potentially coming back to Georgia, what is appealing is having quarterbacks that you think you can trust or that you think can take you to a championship type caliber team. And honestly, there are three different quarterbacks on Georgia's roster, two of which that I'm going to focus on to begin with. And I know the same thing for Jonathan as well is going to be Gunnar Stockton's a sophomore coming into this year. But the other two guys that you're going to be looking at is going to be Carson Beck, who as of right now, Carson Beck is most likely your front runner of it. And then your second guy is Brock Vandegrift. And when I say that Carson Beck is your front runner, the reason I'm saying that is because he's been the backup quarterback all season long. Every time they put a second quarterback in, it was Carson Beck this past year. So that tells you he is currently QB2 when Stetson was there. Now he's going to be currently QB1, but that does not mean that Brock Vandegrift cannot go in there in spring ball, which is about to start soon, and light it up and take that job from him. Or shoot, honestly, Gunnar Stockton could potentially come back as well, and maybe he's just so daggum good that you can't keep him off the field. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that one was going to happen. I just think that Kirby really does put an emphasis on seniority a lot, and also guys like Carson Beck has been there for so long. He understands, especially if Todd Monken stays, he understands Todd Monken's system better than any of those other guys will. So I think that my current front runner for the position is going to be Carson Beck. And I think that's what most people probably think, but there is still a competition there. What do you think?
Oh, there's absolutely a competition. There's competitions all over the field. I don't care how long you've been a starter. If someone else is beating you out this spring or this fall later on, and they're proving consistently that they are better than you, then yeah, you're going to get your spot taken. It's why guys like Mykael Williams are in there starting their true freshman year. And later on in the year, you start seeing some more of those true freshmen like Bear Alexander start getting a lot more reps, taking reps away from some veteran guys that have been in that defensive system for a long time, start taking reps away from those guys because they're proving to be more consistent and more efficient and the more dominant player in practices, and they're earning that right. So the quarterbacks are going to have to do the same. Carson Beck, Brock Vandegrift, Gunnar Stockton, all those guys are going to have to battle it out. And whoever the best option is going to be the guy that ends up winning that job. But I would definitely say that Carson Beck is for sure the front runner. And it's not just because he's been there for 3 years. Well, it is, because I'll tell you this. If you go back and look at Todd Monken's track record, specifically in college, when he was a head coach at Southern Miss and then now offensive coordinator at the University of Georgia, there's a trend with what he does with quarterbacks over a three-year stretch. Now, you're not going to see it in the same way that you with Carson Beck that you have with a Stetson Bennett or Nick Mullins at Southern Miss, but it's that if you go by year by year with Nick Mullins, he started 3 years under Todd Monken, and then Stetson Bennett started 3 years under Todd Monken. Every single year, the completion percentage goes up a little bit. Every single year, the passing yards go up and the passing touchdowns. Both Nick Mullins and Stetson Bennett went from like a first year 2,000 yard passer to throwing for over 4,000 yards and nearly a 70% completion percentage over that 3 year stretch. And you know who else has been in that system for 3 years now under Todd Monken? Carson freaking Beck. And that has a big, and I said that Todd Monken's quarterback development is not talked about enough, especially at the collegiate level, because he's now done it twice. A Nick Mullins right. and a Stetson Bennett. Those are not necessarily household names. Those two were not household names in recruiting or anything like that. That's why Nick Mullins ended up at Southern Miss, and that's why Stetson Bennett had to go to a JUCO and then come back. And even then, he was still a third option. So the fact that he now has two foolproof like examples of like, this is what I do with quarterbacks. And now he's going to have a Carson Beck, someone who was a pretty much a household name recruiting. He's got all of the talent in the world. He's got a killer arm. And if he can just put it all together in this 1 year for himself, then things are going to be just fine at the University of Georgia. We've talked about how much talent they return in their receiving corps, and it's only going to be better, especially if things start clicking with Carson Beck. So that's why I'd say he is your clear front runner, in my opinion, regardless of what the Heisman odds say on some national website about Brock Vandegrift being the front runner for Georgia for the Heisman odds. But yeah, I'd say 15 without a doubt. Just, and you saw it when he came in as a second option throughout the year when they would pull Stetson out, and they did it a good bit. So you got to see a good bit of Carson Beck this year. He looked clean and polished. He threw multiple balls this past year where you're like, ooh, this guy is comfortable in this system now. He knows how to run it, and boy, does he look good throwing the ball. So I think Carson Beck is going to be really good for the University of Georgia if he does pan out the way I think he will.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly, and it's good to like. And everyone so much wrote him off last year because you know he obviously lost his job. I'm not talking about this season. The first year that Georgia won the national championship. You know he was gonna be the starting quarterback, and then all of a sudden, or before the second game of the season, and all of a sudden midweek. You know, that changes. Stetson gets the nod, and all of a sudden Stetson takes off and keeps the job the rest of the way. And it just becomes his at that point. And every single time you saw Carson come into the game, he didn't look polished. He did look a little rough. You know, like he had a rough game. He did throw a pick six, things like that. Like he struggled a little bit. And like you said, this year when he came in, every single time he came in, man, it was like, man, he just looks really clean. Like, he just looks like he knows what he's doing. It's fluid, like you said. He just feels comfortable. I think the guys around him seem to know, like, how to kind of work with him. He seems to, command the pocket or the huddle and all that. He just seems a lot more comfortable than he did the year before. And I think that's definitely going to translate over. It'll be interesting to see how he handles the spotlight as, in my opinion, like I said, he's currently the number one guy. So now he's got the pressure. He'll get those number one reps, and he'll probably split those number one reps with Brock Vandegrift in spring ball especially. So he's going to have somebody right on his heels. That pressure is immense. That pressure is not something that everybody can handle. So it'll be interesting to see how he does it. And plus, the pressure of Georgia's fan base, man. I'm talking, you guys are ruthless. I mean, absolutely ruthless. And while we love you guys as well, but like, it's just, it doesn't take much for Georgia fans to look at a quarterback and say, I don't like him. We got another five-star sitting there. Let's go ahead and give him a try. And in the reality of it, it's really difficult to do that in college football. You don't exactly change quarterbacks that much. Somebody might be having a little bit of a rough day, but that doesn't mean that it's so simple to just switch quarterbacks in the middle of the game or just change starting quarterbacks as a whole. There's a lot of like continuity into like quarterback play and your roster in general, like getting comfortable, chemistry, all of that kind of stuff. And so it's not that simple to do. So what I will say is, say Carson gets the job, if you know, week three comes around and maybe he's, you know, seems a little off or something like that, you got to give him a little bit of time because it's going to be, you know, especially early in the season, you know, it's going to be a where he's going to have to throw the ball 20, 25 times, stuff like that for the first time in his career outside of high school, obviously. And it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get comfortable with it if he is, in fact, the starting quarterback. Like you said, it is kind of funny to me that those Vegas odds or whatever – it wasn't Vegas. Whatever odds it was that had Vandegrift as the favorite out of the two for the Heisman when, as of right now, he's not even the number one guy currently. He could get it. Maybe they know something we don't know. But as of right now, it's not him.
I'll tell you exactly what that is. That's some journalist or whoever wrote that up or whoever came up with the odds. It's someone going down Georgia's roster and looking at recruiting rankings, and they see Brock Vandegrift, five-star, number two quarterback. And that's the guy that we're going to pick from Georgia right there. That's all that is, in my opinion.
Yep.
Now, nothing against Brock Vandegrift, of course, because he's an amazing talent, and he has all the talent in the world that he needs to have to succeed in the SEC. But I think one good thing about, you know, you touched on potentially whoever is the starting quarterback maybe struggling in the first couple of games, because, you know, your first couple of, especially at the start as a starting quarterback, like you are now the guy in the huddle. You said you're the guy calling the shots. You're the guy getting everybody set up, making sure alignment's right, et cetera, relaying the play call. There's a lot more pressure on that as opposed to, okay, we're up 35, I'm getting subbed in, maybe get to throw five or six passes, show off my arm a little bit, and we're going to call it a day. This is now, I'm in here for four quarters, and it's my job to lead this offense down the field every single time that we get the ball. So it's a bit different pressure and a bit different outlook on the game. But the good news is that Georgia's opening schedule this next year is cupcake, 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 like just all the ducks in a row. It's like UT Martin, Ball State. Like you open up with like the first three or four games.
And you mix in, I think in the first four games, three of them are out of conference against like Ball State and UT Martin. And I think that you get South Carolina mixed in there like week three. Yeah. I think that's why week three a second ago, because I'm pretty sure week three is South Carolina. Somebody in the comments, if you want to correct me on that, that'd be great. But I think it's South Carolina. So that'll be like the first test that you get is South Carolina. And that's not an easy game. In general, the good thing is that game will be in Athens because we were in Williams-Price Stadium last year. So that game's in Athens. So whoever the quarterback is at least gets to play at home for that game to kind of get settled into the SEC. And I don't think a team like South Carolina looked really good late in the season. So that's a team that you don't overlook by any means. So I do think it is good. Like right now, everybody's counting them as a bad team because they haven't been great lately, and that they look at the schedule and say, oh, that's not, you know, that's just an average SEC team or something. You don't know. You could get out there and it could be very different once they come into Athens. And, you know, Spencer Rattler is going to be there another year. And maybe he, because he looked a lot better late in the season
just
as well.
Just ask Tennessee what happens if you overlook South Carolina.
Oof.
I mean, don't playoff hopes gone like that. Ran out of freaking fireworks because they hung so many points on your head. Drop your balls or just go and run. So whoever the starting quarterback is, they're going to be able to get their feet under themselves, you know, get their feet wet a little bit, get some experience under them. And then, like you said, their first SEC game is going to be at home. So they're going to have their home crowd behind their back in that game as well. So very favorable schedule to be getting a new starting quarterback into the mix. And you'll have plenty of time to figure things out. And then even then, hopefully in those games, you'll be able to even get a look at your second guy and your third guy. And that's what I'm more interested in, actually, because I'll sit here and it's no secret that we think Carson Beck is going to be the starter. So I'm more interested to see what the depth chart looks like with Gunnar Stockton and Brock Vandegrift after this off season, because, you know, you see people saying that Gunnar Stockton should be the starter this year. And I just can't get behind that just because he's only been here for 1 year. And while again, like, of course he's talented, he's at the University of Georgia for a reason, but I just don't think he's there yet. You know, it's a very hard jump to go from like Gunnar Stockton being your scout team quarterback for TCU. And then the very next season, he's your starting quarterback and leaps a three-year player and a two-year player. I just find that hard to believe. But I'm interested to see what another year for Gunnar Stockton, another year for Brock Vandegrift looks like, and see how those two duel it out and see how they match up against one another. Because this will be the first
– Sorry, go ahead. Say that.
I was just going to say, like, this will be your first year, really, just like last year was like – or this past year was like your true first glimpse at what Carson Beck looked like now.
Yes.
This was also going to be your first true glimpse at what a Brock Vandegrift looks like and potentially a Gunnar Stockton as well if you get that deep into games and you get that far down the depth chart.
Yeah, and this is the challenge for Georgia as of this year, because at this point, especially between the battle of Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift, both of those guys have been there for – a long time. Whoever doesn't get the starting job, it's up to Kirby and Todd Monken or whoever at the time to convince those guys that this is still a good place to be, whoever doesn't win it, because this is when you're going to really have to see that roster management and that quarterback room management from Kirby Smart that so many people have criticized over the years. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, before this season even starts, the fact that he's been able to keep Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift this long shows you that those guys are fully bought in and Kirby's selling them on something that makes them want to stay. And because at this point, one of them should have left by now. You know, like the fact that Carson Beck stayed and sat for 3 years at this point, he's going into his fourth year. So he's going to be a redshirt junior this coming season. And the fact that he sat that long and lost his job last year to Stetson Bennett when he was the one that was looking at being number two, when, you know, when your starting quarterback goes down, I mean, that's one of those things, man, that like that takes some encouragement and takes some convincing to stay. And so that alone is impressive, but now it's really going to be tough. And we don't throw people into the transfer portal on this show. We don't do that unless somebody actually goes in, then we really get into that kind of thing. But being able to convince, say it's Brock Vandegrift, and maybe they can, because Brock Vandegrift would then be staying and sitting for 3 years, just like Carson Beck did. If Carson Beck loses, it would be really tough to keep him at that point. Like at that point, he has to go somewhere, because now he's not going to start at the University of Georgia in that case.
He's like,
if he doesn't win it,
his shot.
If he doesn't win it this year, he's done. Like, he won't start at Georgia. So I do think that, one, I think he's going to win it. We've talked about that before. I definitely think he's the guy that's going to get it. Can't guarantee it, because you never know what Brock Vandegrift is going to look like. But I think that it is possible to keep Brock Vandegrift as well if he doesn't get the job, because he's a local kid. He seems to like the University of Georgia. I haven't heard anything about him being disgruntled or anything like that. Neither have you, I don't think. And if anybody in the comments has heard something, y'all can let us know. But I haven't heard anything about that. So I think he's got him convinced as of right now to maybe stay. And shoot, if Carson starts this year, does a one and done season, I think this year in the offense that we run with his arm talent and stuff, he could have a very, very big season as well. He could have a Stetson Bennett-like performance throwing for 3,500 to 4,000 yards, something like that, I think would not be out of the reach in him with those weapons and offense. So then he would be able to go get drafted, go on to his NFL career after just one season as a starting quarterback, and that would then leave Brock Vandegrift the chance to do the same, get one starting season or something like that. And then you have Gunner, who would then have the option for 1 to 2 seasons as well. You could keep all of these guys happy. You really, really could if you have the right system for them to run and you show them that they can succeed in it. Especially, I think what's going to be really good is if, say, Carson Beck wins the job this year, both of the two quarterbacks that'd be watching could see what he could do in a one-and-done type season. And if he succeeds really well, that's all the convincing you need right there.
Yeah, I think there's something in the water in Athens. Like you said, the fact that Georgia has held on to all three of these quarterbacks for as long as I have, there's something special going on. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they pitch them on. I don't know what they tell them, but whatever they're doing, it works, because it works. And it's not just the quarterback position, because it's the same way that you get Oscar Delp, Pierce Sperling, and all those cats to come in that tight end room, even though there's a Brock Bowers and a Darnell Washington in there and so many other names already starting ahead of them. They're like, just load it up. Get them all in here. That's what we're about. And even like you're still hearing it with more of the other UGA commits of talking like, man, I don't care who comes here. I want to be a dog. I want to come to Athens. Like, that's what you're hearing from other guys that are committed to the University of Georgia. Like, I don't care who comes. Bring anybody. I just want to be in Athens. I want to be in that environment.
They want
to compete. It's ridiculous.
It's
one of the only programs that I have seen in all of college football be able to do this, because do you know how many quarterbacks would have just hung it up immediately at that UAB game when your head coach comes to you 2 days before the game when you think you're about to be the starter and says, hey, we're not starting you anymore. We're going with Stetson Bennett. We're going with the former walk-on, blah, 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 struggled a little bit last year. That's who we're putting in this game. Like, so many people would have walked away right then and would have said, all right, I'm in the portal. I'll see you elsewhere. I'm out of here. Like, I'm going to go find my opportunity somewhere else. I don't know what it is, but that whole staff is filled with nothing but a bunch of wizards in regards to, because in this modern era of college football, people just move around like a carousel. It's just all over the place. Some players play at a new school, it seems like, every single year, just beatboxing all around the place. And so for Georgia, especially at the quarterback position, because there was like a record number of quarterbacks in the transfer portal this past year within the first 2 days of the window being open, like over 150 of them hit the portal. It's crazy. Like, what Georgia's doing at the quarterback position right now is not normal, and that is not the norm in college football. So it's just amazing. I'm baffled the fact that you even have all three of these options if you are a Georgia fan to even be your option at quarterback. The fact that you have three. Most teams don't even have three quarterback options anymore. It's usually you got two guys. Georgia has three this offseason. So you should feel perfectly fine about where your team is at in regards to your play caller and the head man of the offense, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, this is a year that you go into it going, man, I mean, who's it going to be? Because it could be any of them. And honestly, if you're a Georgia fan, you could look at it and say, obviously, whoever Todd Monken and Kirby Smart chooses their starting quarterback is – going to be a very capable individual. At this point, you have no reason to doubt whoever they pick. And yeah, there's probably somebody else on the bench that's a really good quarterback. There's going to be. I guarantee there's going to be two guys on that bench at the time that's going to be a really good quarterback. And yeah, Dan, I see your comment there about Raiola. I don't even know if I say that right, but either way, like the number one quarterback in the country right now for 24. You know, I get that. But here's the thing. That does slightly change things, but here's the thing. If he commits, I don't think he gets guaranteed a starting job the second he walks in. So, therefore, Carson Beck is gone at that point. So, then Brock Vandegrift potentially gets to start if he, you know, wins the job. Your worrisome part at that point is whether or not they can keep Gunnar Stockton happy. But it's also very possible that they could, and it doesn't mess everything up. I mean, they've shown that they can keep quarterbacks happy for this long when a five-star comes on the roster and they make them sit for a while. I mean, I'm not convinced that it would ruin everything.
And I know Dylan Raiola is probably an exception to this because Dylan Raiola is out of this world, uber talented quarterback, like very much so one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country. So, yeah, getting him probably would change things. But, man, people have been saying that about Georgia's quarterback room for the last 2 or 3 years. You know, when there was Stetson Bennett and Carson Beck, and then they brought in Brock Vandegrift, someone was like, well, someone's leaving. You just got a five-star in Brock Vandegrift. Like, someone's going to end up leaving. People were tossing Carson Beck in the portal 2 years ago.
And you had JT Daniels there and everything at that time.
And you had JT Daniels. Like, people like,
everyone's going to leave. Carson Beck in the portal.
And then when Gunnar Stockton came in, everybody was like, well, one of Brock or Carson's going to have to leave because, like, it just doesn't work out that way. People have been saying that for so long. And it's like, yes, you would think. Like, common sense would say, like, well, heck, you just got this dude in your roster. Now, like, someone probably feels the pressure and is like, let me go somewhere else where I know I can start. And this isn't a problem. I don't have to battle it out. But it's almost like these dudes love it. They love the competition. They're here for it. They don't want to just walk into a room and be handed the job. They don't want to be handed the keys as soon as they set foot on campus. They want to go out there and earn it. They love the competition is what it seems like to me. So, yeah, like, it would seem like if a guy like Dylan Raiola were to commit to the University of Georgia, things might change. But people have been saying that, and nothing has changed.
Exactly. Exactly. You look at a spot right now, and it's like Georgia's shown you they can handle it. So we'll see how it goes. And obviously, both you and I will sit right here and say, I hope he signs with Georgia. The dude is insane. I mean, if you've ever watched any of his stuff at all, you know that guy is a gunslinger. And so nobody in Athens would be upset if he commits. And if that does create a domino effect, I mean, it is what it is. Like you said earlier, this program at this point is you go get the best guys available that you can get to come to the school, and they can fight it out from there. And the staff will make sure they get the best ones on the field week in and week out. And sometimes that means that you have to sit a little bit as a quarterback or whatever, every position at Georgia. You might have a linebacker on the roster for 3 years, and then all of a sudden you get to start, and now you're a first-round draft pick. Like, stuff like that happens at Georgia all over the board. And, you just got to get the guys that buy into it. And Georgia seems to be getting everyone, for the most part, to buy into it. And I don't know that Dylan's any different. Maybe he comes – if he comes to Georgia, you know they're setting that precedence of, like, hey, man, there's a lot of dudes in front of you. You got to compete. It's not guaranteed when you come. I know that you are – you got a perfect rating, you know, in your recruiting stuff right now. That doesn't mean you're coming in and starting day one. You have to earn every bit of it. And I think that's just where Georgia is right now, and that's an incredible spot to be as a Georgia fan, knowing that these guys keep coming in and they keep battling it out. And they'll stick around for a while and wait for their turn. I mean, that tells you Kirby Smart is doing it the right way.
Yeah, and Dan, you're absolutely right with that comment saying, I think we have been fortunate with guys that love Georgia. And I think that's the key right there. You're not just recruiting the best of the best every single year. You're not landing a top two class every other year or whatnot. You're getting guys that are buying into what is being preached. They're buying into the university that they're going to. They're in love with Athens. They're in love with where they're at. And that plays – making sure that your players are comfortable and that they're where they want to be is huge. And I think – because, like, especially in this day and age with NIL, it's very easy to just go to the school. It's like, well, this school's offering me $1.5 million, and I don't really care where I'm at. If they're giving me that much money, I'll just go there. And then when you're actually there and you're spending every single day of your life at that university, you're like, I don't really like this place. And so they end up hitting a portal later on. So I think that's definitely a big key, but I think that's enough discussion about the quarterback spot. Like we said, guys, we're going to do this with every single position group, offensive line, running back, wide receiver, et cetera. So we're going to be doing this throughout the offseason, but let us know in the comments which ones you want us to hit on first. You know, we did quarterbacks because that's an easy one to talk about, and that's one that everybody wants to know about what's going on. So we wanted to bring you guys our two cents there. But let us know which ones you want us to hit on first. We'll bring you guys, though, and we'll do the same thing that we did today, give you like 15, 20 minutes about that same subject.
Drop them in the comments now if you want to, or hit us up on social media. I'll put them
either one.
I'll put them on here real quick if this is easier for you on Twitter. Jonathan, the podcast, and me right there. So if whatever y'all want to hear, just DM us, add us on social media, whatever you want to do. We love the engagement on social media as well. And then that'll kind of help us guide ourselves through the postseason. We want everybody. All right, so we got running backs and DBs. Those are good suggestions in the comments.
Those are two good ones.
Obviously good ones and very competitive position groups as well. So maybe the one of those two will probably be a good one to start with next week as well. But we will let you guys know before that episode starts. It is time to bring back a segment that I loved so much last year. And I know that everyone seemed to as well. I know everybody told me it was always funny when we get into it. So hopefully we bring it back and everyone loves it just as much as they did last year. It is the off season, which means it is officially talking season. And what that means is all kinds of fan bases out there talking about Georgia, especially hating on Georgia now that they've won back-to-back. They're so bitter. You know they're putting out some vile stuff on social media. So in the comments right now, if there's something you've heard, go ahead and drop it in there if you want us to talk about it right now. And then we're going to go ahead and get started. Jonathan, I know you had something you wanted to bring for talking season.
Yeah, Dan, I see you asking about King of the Hill. King of the Hill is going to be making its return. Don't worry about it. We've just been, with the content that we have planned for this week and the past couple weeks, we haven't been able to squeeze in him. But don't you worry. King of the Hill will definitely be making its comeback for the offseason, without a doubt. So we'll bring you I'll get some good talking points for us to discuss on the show in the coming episodes. But so mine doesn't even come from a fan, doesn't come from a fan base, which is what makes this one so perfect. It's Ryan Day, Ohio State's head coach. How many weeks has it been since the college football playoff game against Ohio State? It's been like a whole month. Three? We're like a whole month removed because it's now February.
Oh, yeah, it's been a month since that game, yeah.
We've been a whole month removed from this game. So it's, you know, done, decided, whatnot. Georgia is already national champions again. And during a press conference, I guess is what he was doing today, Ryan Day wants to bring up the so-called controversial targeting call with Javon Ballard and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the one that ended up taking Jaxon Smith-Njigba out of the game and what so many people claim to be the only reason why Georgia won. But I must have missed the part of the game where Jaxon Smith-Njigba fell down on his butt when he was trying to cover Arian Smith down the field. So, but anyways, I digress there. And so he goes on this little tangent about, like, you know, well, I contacted this referee and this conference officials and the head official here and whatnot. And I asked him all the same questions about, like, why is this not targeting? Why is this the right call? And every single one of them, or yeah, sorry, I'm saying Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, Jr. Marvin Harrison.
I'm an idiot. Marvin Harrison. You're correct, Dan. Thank you for saving me there. Marvin Harrison. So many dudes over there. It's hard to keep track of which one's which. So Marvin Harrison Jr., that's the one we're talking about, with Javon Ballard and Marvin Harrison Jr. And he's like, and all these officials were like, oh, well, you know, it wasn't actually a direct head-to-head hit. He didn't actually make head-to-head contact, or it wasn't forcible contact to his head. And so he gets all of these explanations, and he goes on to explain them about how he got all these explanations from college referees and officials.
Yeah, from the Pac-12 and, like, the Big Ten, both of them.
All of them. And then ends that with, I still don't agree with it. Buddy. Now, I applaud you for standing in the paint, standing your ground, and remaining firm in this. But the fact that you took time out of your day to go and see if this was indeed the right call, and you had three different people say, like, yes, this is the right call, and they gave you a reasoning behind it, and you're going to still stand there and complain about a play that happened a month ago. You can't even do anything about it now. It, like, what's done is done. Why are we sitting here complaining about that? Why is that your focal point? I don't care that, like, I know that Marvin Harrison was kind of tearing up Georgia's defensive secondary a little bit throughout the game because he's unbelievable. First quarter. Like, but again, like I said, he wasn't the one that had to go cover Arian Smith on that one play touchdown drive. He wasn't the one that let Georgia drive down the field to go and win the game. He wasn't the one that had to go there and kick a game-winning field goal as time expired. He didn't have to do any of that, you know? Like, so it's the same conversation that we have with Alabama all the time about that national championship game and their wide receivers getting hurt. Injuries are part of football. It's a very physical game. And so Georgia had to deal with it with Darnell Washington being getting hurt, and they had to put in a true freshman, Oscar Delp. You didn't hear any Georgia fans complaining about that at all. They just changed, took their lumps
and like – They put him in the, you know, with his hand in the dirt and stuff, and Georgia definitely had to change how they like attacked because of that the rest of the game. So like it's just about making adjustments when something like that happens. And as far as Marvin Harrison Jr. goes, yeah, he was tearing Georgia up in the first quarter, but he didn't have a single catch in the second, third quarter before he got hurt. I mean, for two quarters he was shut out. It didn't have a catch. So he tore him up in the first quarter. But they were locking him down. It's not like they needed him to leave the game. Like they figured him out. They were able to stop him.
I just kind of think it's so funny that Georgia is still living rent-free in that man's head. At this point in the offseason, like all of your attention should be on the upcoming season and managing your own roster and getting ready for your own season. And he's taking time out of his day to go ask questions about a game that they lost and is done with. Like, what? What are you doing?
I get that like media members are the ones asking those questions and kind of like prying at them. But like, you got to know as a coach like that, I don't think Kirby answers that question. I think Kirby goes,
lost the game, you know,
game's over at this point. I can't concern myself with it. It is what it is. We're moving on. We're looking forward to next year. He gives you the coach speak stuff, right? Nick Saban also, well, prime Nick Saban doesn't really answer now lately. I don't know. Nick Saban might, you never know what Nick Saban's going to do now. He's kind of changed,
isn't he?
Yeah. Kind of a loose cannon lately as far as how he answers media questions, but Kirby would not answer that question like that.
No, absolutely, I don't think so, not.
No, mine is also, it's kind of funny that that's what yours was, because you know, mine kind of plays similar where you're going into, you had the coach, right? Well, linebacker Johnny Hodges from TCU, he was on the Winners Club podcast. I don't remember if it was this week or when it was, but recently, and I saw a clip of it today. And he got asked about, like, you know, being the underdog going into the game. How'd you feel about it? That kind of thing. And he goes, oh, we thought it was going to be just like Michigan. You know, like we were the underdog there. We surprised Michigan. We go out and do this. And Georgia just struggled against Ohio State. And he goes, then that ball kicked off and Georgia was not the same team they were against Ohio State. And I wanted to be like, buddy, you're not Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like let's start there. You are not Ohio State. Ohio State's a better football team than TCU by far.
Yeah.
Georgia played a good game. Like the fact that like apparently that tells you they literally went into the Georgia game going, "Oh, Georgia played a bad game last week." No, the heck they didn't. I mean, you go look at that game. Watch the game again. Yeah, they made a couple mistakes. But Georgia played a really good game. The fact that playing that type of game and having that type of offensive performance, they had a bad defensive performance against a very good offense on the other side of the ball. But like offensively, Georgia did something, you know, incredible. They were constantly fighting and constantly doing everything. They did not look bad. Georgia did not look bad as a whole in that game. So apparently TCU went to that game going, man, Georgia did not look good. We can go in there and shock the world. We're going to go shock the world. We're going to do what we did against Georgia. Guess what? Georgia's not going to gift you 28 points like Michigan did. They're not going to throw two pick sixes like that and give you like so many points. They're not going to do that. And you, my friend, are not Ohio State. You are TCU. Like, come on, man. Not even the same.
My man, you just lost to Kansas State a couple weeks ago. Like, like, come on, brother. Like, what are we doing? Like, I get it. Like, I get it. You want to have confidence. You want to kind of build up your self-esteem a little bit. And everybody does the game-by-game comparison, like the transitive property, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Like about like,
transitive.
Oh,
it's well, transitive this team, property. And yeah, no, that does not work in college football, man. Transitive property does not work.
This team beat them by X amount of points, and we beat them by X amount of points or whatever. So like, we should be okay. Like, it doesn't work. And boy, did it not work for that game. I mean, it was as soon as you get off the bus, it was like, I think we gonna be in some trouble, sir. Like this is not good.
We talked about it. Like my favorite thing to say afterwards, and it stayed true the entire game, was after the first drive of that game, I literally in around everybody, I'm going, that was too easy. It was too easy, and it continued to be too easy the entire game.
you were like that clip of LeBron after he gets that and one. He's like, that's too easy. That's too easy. That was you in the stands. Stoddard was over there trolling the TCU fans in SoFi Stadium after the first drive of the game.
Hey, was I wrong? That's the thing. I was not. That's the problem. Like, that was their problem. That's why they didn't like me, is because I was not wrong. Like, a lot of TCU fans understood what they were going into. I got approached by one before the game even started, and a guy walked up to me, and he was like, he started to make the joke. He was like, why'd y'all even make the trip? Y'all think y'all have a chance? He was obviously joking and stuff. And he goes, no, he said, honestly, we're just happy to be here. He literally then turns around and says, I don't think TCU has a chance to win this game. We just are happy to be like a part of it. It's a big turnaround for our program, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, you're smart. You're logical. You're a logical fan. Like, but I think there were some, though, like the ones I was sitting next to, they really thought they had a genuine chance. And it just ended up being too easy. So I think obviously that was their linebacker talking. He obviously thought it was going to be very different. And I think they were just like in for like a complete culture shock when they got there on the field and they lined up across from Georgia and said, man, this ain't it. We do not have
Coach,
this.
Get me out of here.
Coach, this ain't it.
Gosh, they took our best player and they made 50 of them and put them on their roster. That's probably what they're like. Who are these people? They're freaking dudes made in a lab over here. Like, probably like, oh, they ain't talking about the SEC football, are they, Coach? That's different. Buddies over there eating wings in the middle of a game, the ultimate disrespect. Like, man, this is a cakewalk in the national championship. We got millions of people watching our tails get tucked between our legs. But yeah, I just had to laugh at that clip. The fact that he was like, yeah, and then the game kicked off and it was like, these boys are not Ohio State or Michigan, that's for sure. So I definitely thought that was funny. But great way to kick off talking season for this year. Like Stoddard mentioned earlier in the episode, if you guys see things on your Twitter timelines, freaking send them over to us. We'll give you a little shout out to your Twitter handle or wherever you send it to us. We'll let the good people know who sent you our way and whatnot. So we'll give you a little shout out on the show. And then we'll talk about those topics as well. I know they're ramping up. I already see those Tennessee fans running their mouths, and the Florida fans, they're always doing it because that's all
they've never stopped. They never stop.
They ain't got nothing else to talk about for their own program. So they got to actually talk about someone that's good. So, I mean, just send them our way, let us know, and we'll talk about them on the show. Anytime that we do talking season, we'll let you guys know on our Twitter page right before our episodes that we give you plenty of time to send in the suggestions. King of the Hill is going to be making a comeback. We're going to keep breaking down position battles and whatnot throughout the year on both defense and offense. We saw you guys dropping suggestions in the comments, and we will be sure to take those into consideration as to who we do next week, and we'll just keep rolling down the list. We said that the offseason content was going to keep rolling, and it is only getting started. It is only going to heat up, and it's going to keep rolling and rolling. So stick around with us. Keep hitting that subscribe button. Keep hitting that like button. Please. And comment down below like I said, what you guys want to see from the position groups, put that in the comment section if you didn't watch us live. And let us know any suggestions that you have of what you guys want us to talk about. We are open ears, and we are happy to discuss anything that you guys have questions about or want our opinions on. But that is going to do it for this episode. Like and subscribe, as I said already. And Stoddard, you get to close us out.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure y'all like this video before you leave. There's a lot of people in here that have not liked the video yet, so make sure you do that before you leave the show tonight. But as always, keep it classy in the Classic City. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stoddfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime,
to the expressive sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.